This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 21st of August 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. Today, Tim Robey, film critic for the Daily Telegraph, joins me in studio to talk movies. We'll take a look at the fascinating documentary The Wolf Pack, directed by Crystal Mazel. Then we'll turn to a new Franco-English romantic comedy, Gemma Bovary. And finally, the acclaimed 45 Years, a tense drama starring Charlotte Rampling. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. So welcome one and all, and welcome Tim.
Hi.
Let's begin with The Wolf Pack. It won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's a documentary. Tell us about it.
It is very interesting and unusual, and in some ways quite uncomfortable. It's about a family in Manhattan. There are six brothers. They all look very similar. They've got long, dark hair and slightly kind of strange teeth. And you're kind of stuck with them for the entire film. They have a younger sister who you don't really see very much, and their two parents. And we're inside their flat on the Lower East Side almost entirely. And the reason for that is that even though they range in ages from like 11 to 18, they themselves have almost never left this flat. They've been brought up in the flat by their parents, homeschooled. Their dad is a sort of former Hare Krishna and an extremely authoritarian and difficult guy who has basically strictly enforced this regime where they've just been stuck there. And all they've been able to do to kind of escape in any way is watch movies and make their own kind of remakes of various films.
Let's hear a little bit from the film.
My parents didn't encourage us to communicate with society, so we were kind of shut off. Always lived in this apartment.
In the summer, there was more chance of us getting out. Sometimes we go out once a year.
This is like 3D, man.
It's very fresh out here.
And at one particular year, we never got out at all.
The Wolf Pack there. Without giving too much away about the family's story, obviously something has changed to allow the filmmakers to have access to them, to allow these guys to speak openly about what happened.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's been a bit of a sort of power shift in the house as the kids have got older and as their dad has kind of got a little bit more feeble, really, and his control over them has lessened. The director doesn't explain in the film how she came to be allowed in, but what actually happened is that she saw them kind of running past her on the street, all dressed as Reservoir Dogs, which was the film they were currently making, with all the shades on, all looking exactly like the Reservoir Dogs characters. And she was
that
just
would
like,
make you stop
who
and think,
are these guys? Who is this strange? And she was the one who came up with the name The Wolf Pack for them, which they loved and embraced. And they sort of befriended her and invited her in, and the parents were actually cool with it. And the first time she came inside, the parents decided, well, we're going to leave and just let you talk to our kids. And then she was just allowed in and allowed to kind of basically document their lives over a number of years. I think it was 4.5 years she spent doing it. At first, she didn't talk to the father at all. And at the beginning of the film, you really hardly see him. And gradually, you realize that she's kind of inching closer to like talking to him a little bit and interviewing him. And he actually kind of likes the attention, but he's obviously, he's a little bit repentant about what went down. The mother, you can sense, has been kind of a prisoner in her own way too for their entire marriage. And so that's a very interesting subplot. The daughter we don't really talk to. She's younger than her siblings. She's actually got an illness that made it difficult for the director to kind of put her on screen. But it's all very interesting. And I mean, like I say, to begin with, very uncomfortable because you're in this strange, very underfurnished, kind of dingy house full of people. You don't really know what the energy is going to be like, and you wonder if, in fact, there's going to be confrontations with the filmmaker being there. But gradually, the kind of affection for this family grows out of the film, and you start really rooting for the kids to kind of develop, you know, independent lives.
Do you think the fact that, you know, they were allowed to watch films and that was their connection to the outside world then made everyone within the family more comfortable about the idea of essentially being subjects of a film?
I think that's a large part of it, actually. That's probably what encourage them all to befriend her. It's like, oh, this is a filmmaker and we can do our own film with us as the stars, not just pretending to be Harvey Keitel, etc. You know, we're the stars of this film. You can sort of sense that that's what's in it for them in a way. And off the back of the film, they've kind of got out there and they've gone to screenings and they've traveled and all sorts of things. They have become these stars in a sense. So it is almost like their kind of moment of fame has arrived and their chance to escape the situation they were in. I think it's still a film with lots of kind of uncomfortable undercurrents, which not all of which the director like really addresses or interrogates. And she doesn't explain to us why the parents were like happy for them to watch these really violent films, like when they were growing up. Some of them, like, you know, preteen kids watching stuff like Pulp Fiction, and you know, this is a bit strange. But in fact, the strangeness of the family is just like paramount. There's almost nothing. There's so much going on there that you can't quite put your finger on.
And does she push into whether there is any sort of hint of rebellion amongst any of the boys towards their family situation?
Yeah, for sure. The oldest brother in particular is the one who kind of takes charge and decides enough's enough. We're now going to kind of do our own thing. We're going to go our own way. And we're not going to listen to your kind of draconian rules anymore. And so gradually they make this bid for freedom.
Okay, that's The Wolf Pack. It had its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival in January. It's open in the UK today and will be in the Netherlands very soon. And I'm sure you'll be able to find it wherever else you may be. Let's move on now to Gemma Bovary, a modern reimagining of the 19th century classic Madame Bovary. It stars the British actress Gemma Arterton, and she talks about the story of an English couple moving to a small family in Normandy. How does this, whenever your sort of old stories are reimagined for the modern world, I sort of slightly wince a bit and think, well, what was wrong with the original? But am I just being a Philistine here? Should I just embrace the fact that actually change happens and there's nothing wrong with that?
Well, it's trying to be playful. I don't know if you remember a few years ago that film Tamara Drew.
I do.
That Gemma Arterton was in. Well, that was a reimagining of Far From the Madding Crowd in the English countryside contemporary. And it's by a graphic novelist called Posy Simmons, and this is by the same writer. So she's basically done for Madame Bovary what Tamara Drew did for Far From the Madding Crowd, and managed to get Gemma Arterton in there again. And I think the playfulness still works, actually. And what's nice about it is that it's a very bilingual film. French director Anne Fontaine, mainly French cast, except for Gemma Arterton and a few of the other British actors.
Who speaks French in the film?
She does speak in kind of faltering French. You know, it's believable. She's not a native French speaker. And so her kind of like attempts to learn French are part of the plot, really. And being the Madame Bovary character, she obviously is a bored housewife. Her husband, Jason Fleming's character, is kind of decent but dull. And there's this boy down the road studying in a chateau who kind of completely wins her over and seduces her. And you kind of wonder how it's going to play out, because obviously things do not end very well for Madame Bovary in the book. And you kind of, the film keeps kind of leading you down a direction of wondering if there's going to be a sort of suicide ending or what's going to happen, and slightly teasing you with that. It's very playful, and I don't think it wants you to take it very seriously, which is a little odd, because there's stuff in there that, you know, it's difficult not to be a little bit perturbed by. It's not all fun and games, and it's not actually especially funny. It's just kind of quite light throughout. I did like things about it, though. I think it's quite appealing to anyone who kind of enjoys French cinema, but it's also, like I say, the kind of bilingualness of it is interesting and quite rare. It's about half and half in English and French, I would say. And I think some of the cast is great. The character that really comes to life is actually the character of the local baker, who Fabrice Lucchini, the French actor, plays. And he's really the sort of narrator figure, and he sees it all going on in front of him. He's kind of too old to really be a contender in terms of someone who's going to seduce her, but he sees it all playing out and kind of regrets his own lost youth and all this sort of thing, and becomes a slightly meddling figure, and he's fantastic in it.
Do you think it works as an update of Madame Bovary, or do you think actually perhaps it would have worked just as well if it had a completely different title and only afterwards you go, oh, hang on, that was a little bit like...
I think it kind of hinges on you knowing what Madame Bovary is or what the story is a bit. It's sort of a bit of a parasite film, in that you kind of, it wouldn't really work independently. And there's a big joke made at the end about another classic of contemporary literature, which maybe is the next one down the line. You know, some new neighbours move into the village, and there's a joke made about their surname being Karenin, or a version on Karenina. So it's kind of very much like leeching off our associations with these classics. And I think that's fine.
Let's hear a little clip of it.
This is Gemma Bovary, husband Charlie.
We just moved here from London.
Devinez comment il s'appelle.
Bonjour, Madame Bovary.
Bovary. La même où Flaubert a écrit son chef-d'œuvre. Vous l'avez lu?
Non.
Au fond de son âme, cependant, elle attendait un événement.
Sounds beautiful.
Let's talk about Gemma Arterton, an actress who, an actor who, you know, found fame a few years ago and was lauded for her work in sort of more independent cinema, and then got quite famous, did some stuff which perhaps wasn't so good. Is this a return to form for her?
Yeah, she's made some pretty kind of rotten Hollywood films in her time.
Hansel and Gretel.
I think, yeah, and Prince of Persia and stuff like that. It's not all worked out well for her. I don't think she's ever going to quite shrug off that kind of head girl attitude that she kind of exudes. But this is one of her better performances lately. I thought she was absolutely fine in Tamara June. She's maybe a little bit better in this. It's the right kind of vehicle for her. And she's kind of quite loose and liberated in it. And the film is kind of pushing a few more boats out in terms of the sex and stuff than some of her other work. So I think it will do her absolutely no harm.
She's still 29.
Yeah, she's still very young. Her younger sister is now nipping at her heels as well. Hannah is quite good and has been in a couple of good films now. So there's a bit of a rivalry that's going to kick off there, I think, a bit like Joseph and Ralph Fiennes, I suspect. But I thought this was a perfectly okay choice for her. She still needs the kind of defining role, though, that's going to really kind of bring respect from the critics. I don't think this is quite it.
A perfectly okay choice. Sort of three stars.
It's a right down the line three star film, this one. I'm not going to beat around the bush.
Okay. Yeah, inoffensive. Let's move on now to our final film. This is 45 Years by Andrew Hay. It's his first feature film since Weekend in 2011. It's based on a short story by David Constantine called In Another Country. It's a drama about a couple about to celebrate their 45th anniversary, but then a letter is sent to the husband which might threaten that celebration. Before we hear from you, Tim, let's hear a clip.
This really is a great venue for an anniversary. So full of history, you see. Like a good marriage.
What is it?
They found her. You know who I'm talking about, don't you?
We never talked about it in all the years that we've known each other.
And it's tainted everything.
Tom Courtney, Charlotte Rampling. Can't go wrong, really, can you?
I mean, it really doesn't go wrong. This film doesn't put a foot wrong. It's absolutely immaculate. I think it's probably the best British film of this year that we're going to see. Andrew Haig made the fantastic Weekend, which was the best British film of that year. He's really on a roll. He's taken a very, very short story. It's only about 12 pages long, this thing, and it just gives you the barest outline, this idea that the husband lost an ex-girlfriend, you know, years and years before in an accident in the Alps. And then her body is discovered, and suddenly it's almost like their marriage is on a precipice. They're right on the verge of their 45th anniversary, and everything that the wife, Kate, assumed was kind of fine, it is suddenly really, really, really rocky. And it all plays out in the performances. It's not the kind of film where there's a lot of verbal recriminations and a lot of kind of big shouting matches or anything like that. It all plays out in a very still way, and it's all done really through close-ups and through the way, the kind of temperature of the scene, if you like, the way that the actors kind of react to what's happening, and Charlotte Rampling in particular, who's in every scene of the film, the way you you see her hardening against the idea of this celebration they're about to go through, and really hardening against the whole idea of this kind of lie that she feels their marriage has been built on. It's really kind of brutal, but in a very subtle way. It could have been like a Bergman film. It could have been really kind of bitter and angry and shouty, but it's incredibly still and sort of chilly.
Very English.
That's the way they've gone for it. You know, they've gone out of their way to make it extremely, to make the emotions kind of like very, very repressed and kind of tamped down. But you see them coming out in just flickers of emotion on her face, really. And it hinges on the question of whether she can forgive him or not, which is a very interesting question. And it's, again, that's not a question that the script answers. It's one that her performance answers when you watch it.
And those performances from Charlotte Rampling in particular and Tom Courtney?
Both fantastic. They won the Best Acting Awards in Berlin, which is when this film premiered. I kind of talked about it at the time, but this is now its British release, and it deserves all the kind of acclaim it's going to get. I think Charlotte Rampling will be nominated for things at the end of the year, and hopefully Courtney as well, because I think he hasn't had such a good role for an awfully long time, and neither of them have, in fact, and they both just excel here, and their kind of chemistry together is really believable as well.
Courtney tends to end up in his most recent roles being sort of, you know, the old man to the main character, or the old man's old friend.
He's sometimes slightly kind of doddery sidekick figure. I liked him in Quartet. I thought he was okay in that, but this is his best role for at least 20 years, I would say, on film. And for Rampling, at least 10. Again, she's such a detailed actress. And there's something so kind of potentially deadly about her. There's something sort of withering about her ability to just kind of turn on the chill when she wants to.
That's 45 years. It premiered, as Tim says, at the Berlin Film Festival earlier this year. It's going to be released in the UK next week, and then later in the year in France, Germany and Sweden. And that brings us to the end of today's Monocle Arts Review. Tim Robey, thank you very much indeed for joining me in the studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. The producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and the sound engineer was Chris Chilvers. Join us again on Monday when we'll be discussing some of the latest exhibitions in Vienna with our correspondent in that city, Kim Bradley. But for now, from me, goodbye, and thank you very much for listening.